Resources Committee to order. Today is Monday, April 28th, 2025. The time is 3:30 p.m. Please turn off your cell phones. Committee members present: Senator Hughes, Senator Kawasaki, Senator Myers, Senator Dunbar, Senator Klayman, and myself, Senator Giesel. Senator Wilkowski is excused today. We have a quorum to conduct business. Thank you to Heather and Emma for helping us with the recording of the minutes and with the audio today. Consideration of the governor's appointees will be the first thing on our agenda today, and that will be followed by Senate Joint Resolution 18 related to wildfire preparedness. It has a companion bill, HJR 15, which will actually take over. It will supersede SJR. And then we're going to hear SB 174, invasive species management. So first of all, we are going to hear governor's appointees that were not completed last week. Samuel Laffey is being appointed to the State Assessment Review Board. He was going to be first up. He is not yet online. So we will go to an appointee to the Board of Fish, and that is Olivia Irwin. To review, the Board of Fisheries consists of 7 members. They should be residents of the state. They are chosen based on their interest in public affairs, good judgment, knowledge, and ability to in the field of action of the board. The board strives for a diversity of opinions. The compensation is at range 20A for board meetings and half of that for other meetings. They meet 4 to 5 times per year for a total of 33 to 45 days. So it's a significant commitment. There is a new member being appointed, Olivia Irwin. She is online, I assume. Checking now, yes. All right, Ms. Irwin, can you hear us?
Chair?
Hello?
Madam Chair, can you hear me?
Yes, now we can hear you. Ms. Irwin, I will have you introduce yourself for the record and let us know why you want to serve on the Board of Fish.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Senator Giesel. And I want to thank first Governor Mike Dunleavy for the appointment, and also thank Senators Wilkowski, Senator Dunbar, and Senator Kawasaki for meeting with me when I was down in Juneau a few weeks ago. Can you guys hear me okay? I'm sorry, I'm getting some feedback on my end.
It sounds very clear on our end.
Okay, good. Okay, great. For those senators that I missed during my time in Juneau, I apologize for not getting a chance to meet with you. Dan Hazoon, Olivia Sauza, Derhun Danaka Hidle, Hanahi Sivni, Ina Ah, Gretchen Sumter Irwin, Bauza, James Timothy Irwin, Hagaila A, Tagatili Hutan Eslan. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Olivia Hanahi Irwin. I am from Nenana, Alaska, and I am a newly appointed member to the Board of Fisheries. I spent most of my time growing up between Alaska and Missouri, coming home in the summer for culture camps and learning from my elders how to cut fish. I graduated from high school in Missouri and then went out to California for my undergraduate degree. I moved home to Alaska in 2020 and started working with nonprofits and tribal organizations. Eventually, I got into fish and game policy through a collaboration between Tanana Chiefs Conference and University of Alaska Fairbanks. I took classes on state and federal management, learning how to read regulations, understanding policy, and how to engage at management meetings. After that, I began attending Board of Fish and Board of Game meetings and became the co-chair of the Minto Nenana Advisory Committee. Through this, I've worked closely and in collaborations with other ACs in the region, such as Tanana Rampart Manly, and other organizations such as Tanana Chiefs Conference and Doyon, to develop proposals and comments, creating a unified voice from our region. Throughout my years on the AC, I've been diligent in attending other AC meetings, including Fairbanks AC, Tanana Rampart Manly, and Yukon Flats. I found this integral in understanding the entire story of what's happening throughout the river. In order to understand our fish, we need to know about what the people are seeing and experiencing as our fish are coming in. I also worked closely with the Wood Bison Restoration Project, which is not related to fisheries. But through this process, myself and our AC met with other ACs, organizations, state agencies, and Board of Game members to develop a plan. I participate weekly in the AYK working group. And at my first Board of Fish meeting, I successfully legalized hook and line as subsistence gear throughout the Yukon River. I did this by collaborating with ADF&G staff and board member John Jensen. This was also where I learned about compromising on regulations, as my own river of the Tanana River was not included in this proposal. This experience empowered me to further engage in policymaking and management meetings because I felt there was a place for me in the process. This experience is one of the reasons I want to be on the Board of Fish, to promote the public process, to encourage public participation from the people closest to the resource, and to support the board as it develops strategies to better engage with user groups and support their involvement in decision-making. The main reason I want to be on the Board of Fish, though, is to protect and promote healthy Alaskan fish stocks, especially our Chinook salmon. I've seen it happen on the Yukon. We're now in a 7-year moratorium of no fishing for Chinook. I come from a long line of fishermen. I have family from every user group, and I feel the pain of losing the commercial fishery along the Yukon. My auntie and uncle used to operate a commercial fish reel in Nenana, alongside with many other families. But today, I know of only one Nenana resident still building and actively operating a fish wheel. I want to preserve and protect the resources of Alaska's fisheries, as well as the way of life that comes along with being a fisher person. I am young, enthusiastic, and deeply knowledgeable of the regulations. I do my homework, I listen well, and if chosen to serve on the Board of Fish, I will make decisions based on science and stakeholder experience that follows the statutes for the promotion of healthy, thriving fish stocks. I want to take a moment to thank the wide range of support I received for my appointment and the letters of support for my confirmation from individuals and organizations throughout the state, including ASN, Chitna Dipnetters Association, Doyon Sea Alaska, TCC, Alaska Outdoor Council, Kenai River Sport Fishing Association, many tribal councils, and multiple ACs. Thank you, Madam Chair, for providing me this time to introduce myself.
Thank you very much, Ms. Irwin. Committee members, any questions? Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Irwin, for being willing to serve on this board. The prior Board of Fish appointee that we spoke with last week was asked about hatcheries, and I wonder if you could also elaborate what your position is on hatcheries, particularly those in the southern part of the state.
Thank you, Senator Dunbar, for the question. I truly believe that we need to have a statewide discussion on this issue. I've started to look at the science, but have a lot more homework to do, so I don't have an answer for you yet. But I plan to review the data prior to any meeting where action needs to be taken and ensure that I engage with stakeholders who are closest to that resource. And I will also note that the Board of Fish has very limited authority over hatcheries, and I would defer to the legislature for most of those issues.
Follow-up, Senator Dunbar.
No, thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Myers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Irwin, I'm looking over your resume here that you sent in, and it's got a bit about decriminalizing subsistence practices. Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yes, thank you for that question. So throughout our state, currently among multiple river systems, including my own, there's been an inability for subsistence needs to be met, and it is a priority of the state in accordance with Alaska Statute 1605258 to ensure subsistence needs are being met. And without the ability to meet subsistence needs, many people are turning to taking advantage of fishing opportunities that are not legal. And so without subsistence needs being met, Unfortunately, some people in our state are having to turn to other means to get their fish. And so I would like to ensure that the people within the state of Alaska who are closest to the resource are receiving access and opportunity to the resource.
Follow-up, Senator Myers?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. So as you mentioned, the Yukon's been shut down for fishing for quite a few years now. Under what type of circumstances would you feel were appropriate to shut down subsistence fishing, recognizing it's, you know, something of a last resort?
Thank you for the question, Senator, through the chair. That would be something that I would need to have information and data presented to me. I would need to know in-season reports and hear from the managers in order to make that decision.
Follow-up, Senator Myers?
Not right now, thank you.
Further questions for the appointee? All right, seeing none, I'm going to open public testimony. I see, looks like, four people online. I'm going to start with Virgil Umfenier, in Fairbanks. Mr. Umfenier? Mr. Umfenier, while you're unmuting, I will just let all of the testifiers know the time will be limited to 2 minutes. Mr. Umfenier, are you there?
Okay. Yes. Okay. Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Virgil Umfenier. I've served 3 terms on the Board of Fisheries. I've been on the Pacific Salmon Commission, that's the salmon treaty between Canada and the U.S., longer than anyone from either country. I want to speak wholeheartedly in favor of Olivia being confirmed to the State Board of Fisheries. I own a fish and meat processing business in Fairbanks. I bought fish from family members of hers when we used to be able to fish. I like to focus on letting the senators know what the status is in the Yukon River drainage and basically the whole northern half of the state. The king salmon are in dire straits. The Kenai River and the Yukon, the Kenai River first run of king salmon and the Yukon River king salmon runs are only 20% of the long-term average, with no fishing directed on king salmon, period, in either river. The chum salmon that run up the Chena River right in Fairbanks and the Salsa River, 40 miles upriver from Fairbanks on the Tanana. This past year, the Chena River had 9% of the long-term average of fish counted, with no directed fishery downriver for those salmon. The Salsa River only had 4% of the long-term average for the date that they quit counting the fish. So that is the situation that our salmon are in. And I also was on the Alaska Salmon Research Task Force, the same as Mr. Carpenter. Mr. Carpenter did not learn anything from that because we all voted at the end.
Mr. Umfenier, yes. We are addressing the appointee of Ms. Irwin, and your 2 minutes have expired. Thank you for verbalizing your support for this appointee. Next, we're going to move on to the next person online. That's Shannon Martin, calling in from Soldotna, the executive director of the Kenai River Sport Fishing Association. Welcome, and I remind you of the 2 minute testimony time.
All right. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the Senate Resources Committee. For the record, my name is Shannon Martin, and I'm calling. Actually, I'm calling from Washington, D.C., but I reside in Soldotna on the Kenai Peninsula. I'm the executive director of the Kenai River Sport Fishing Association, and I'll be speaking on their behalf. Kenai River Sport Fishing Association is a 501c3 nonprofit dedicated to ensuring the sustainability of the Kenai River and Alaska's fish resources. Established in 1984, Chris is the leading sport fish advocacy group in Alaska, supporting sport fishing opportunities and access. Krista would like to express our support for Ms. Irwin to the Alaska Board of Fisheries. Ms. Irwin is well-spoken and familiar with our organization through her time serving on the Minso Nanana Fish and Game Advisory Committee. In that role, she gained valuable experience working closely with members of the Board of Fish and stakeholders from all of the user groups and staff from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. We consider firsthand knowledge and familiarity with the Board of Fish process essential for anybody seeking a position on the board. Through several interviews with Krista, we found Ms. Irwin to be deeply committed to the sustainable management of Alaska's fisheries and aligned with Krista's core priority, and that's delivering more fish into our rivers. We respectfully urge you to confirm the appointment of Ms. Olivia Irwin to the Alaska Board of Fish. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Martin, for your testimony. Next up, we have Craig Thythluck from Fairbanks. He is the Fisheries Policy Director, Native Peoples Action. Welcome, Mr. Thythluck. Can you hear us, Mr. Thythluck? Okay. Mr. Thythluck, you may be muted. We can't hear you. While you're figuring out that technology, let's move on to Casey Hobson. Casey is calling in from Anchorage. Welcome, Casey, and I would just remind you of the two-minute time limit if you would introduce yourself for the record and any affiliations. Welcome. Casey, are you muted? All right. Let's go to the room. Is there anyone here in the room that wishes to testify on the appointment of Olivia Irwin to the Board of
Hello?
Fish? Hello. Who is this that's speaking? Hello?
Hi. I'm sorry. This is Casey Hobson.
All right. Well, welcome, Casey. If you would introduce yourself for the record, give us your affiliations, and you have 2 minutes to indicate your opinions of Olivia Irwin to the Board of Fish.
Great. Thank you so much, and I apologize for that technical challenge. Good afternoon, members of the Senate Resource Committee. My name is Casey Kunmulu Hobson. I am representing myself today. I am proud to testify in support of Olivia Hanahi Irwin today to the Board of Fish. I am a lifelong resident of Alaska with roots in the North Slope, but now living in Anchorage. I have known Olivia for several years and have worked with her in a professional capacity as well in that time. I am firmly in support of her appointment to the Board of Fish. Not only does she understand the process, and is a process geek, and I mean that in the best way possible. She is deeply committed to making it accessible for all Alaskans. And I believe she's extremely thorough and always does her research before making a decision that will impact people. She is passionate about ensuring that all those who depend on our salmon are able to practice their livelihoods. And more importantly, I believe she brings a perspective that is underrepresented on the board and sorely needed in this time of critical salmon decline along so many of our river systems. I believe she will be a strong asset to the Board of Fish and respectfully urge the committee to support her appointment. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Hobson. Pardon me. I understand that Craig Thythluck is online now from Fairbanks. Mr. Thythluck?
Yes, sorry. I apologize. I was looking for the mute button and I accidentally hung up. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you just fine. The technology can be challenging. Welcome.
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the Senate Resource Committee. For the record, my name is Craig Thythluck. I'm the Fisheries Policy Director for Native Peoples Action. I have been a lifelong subsistence user, a lifelong sports fisherman, and a Bristol Bay Limited Entry Permit owner since the early 2000s, and I'm speaking on behalf of Native Peoples Action. Native Peoples Action is a statewide, nonpartisan organization dedicated to protecting and strengthening Alaska Native peoples and our ways of life. We are committed to addressing and restoring our people's inherent rights to hunt, fish, harvest, gather, trap, share, and have ceremony, as well as managing and stewarding our homelands for abundance. I am calling today to express Native Peoples' action and strong support for Olivia Irwin. Irwin's nomination as a new member of the Alaska Board of Fisheries. Since NPA has worked with Olivia, she has consistently demonstrated exceptional dedication and deep commitment to service of her communities as co-chair to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, and Nana Minto AC, policy coordinator for the Yukon River Drainage Fisheries Association, and in her recent nomination to the Eastern Tier Regional Advisory Council. Olivia shows the leadership, commitment, and the ability to work with commercial fishermen, subsistence and personal fishers and users, and all other stakeholder groups in a way that is inviting, constructive, and solution-oriented. Native Peoples Action believe that Hanahi's appointment to the Board of Fisheries will bring a needed perspective and innovative solutions as a Board of Fish member. Olivia's ability to collaborate and solve problems will be invaluable in ensuring Alaska's fisheries' long-term health and prosperity. Thank you for considering our recommendations. We are confident that Olivia Hanahi Irwin will be a tremendous asset to the Board of Fisheries and the future of Alaska fisheries. I honor Madam Chair for listening to our public testimony.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Thank you. Next up, we have Lewis Silas, Minto Ninana Fish and Game AC. Welcome, Mr. Silas.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, Chair and esteemed members of the committee. You guys hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you just fine.
Okay, thank you. It's an honor and pleasure to be able to speak to you guys and to also be able to speak in support of Olivia Irwin's appointment to the Fish Board. My name is Lewis Silas. I serve as the Chief of Fire Operations for Scorched Earth Services. I'm a 26-year wildland firefighter. I also serve as Vice President of Seth the AHA Corporation, the Village Corporation out of Minto. I'm honored to speak on behalf of the Minto and Ninana AC advisory committee in support of Olivia Irwin's appointment to the Alaska Board of Fisheries. I am also a member of said committee. Olivia is a dedicated advocate for our communities, bringing a wealth of experience and a deep understanding of our local and regional fisheries issues. As co-chair of the Minto Ninana Fish and Game Advisory Committee, she's consistently demonstrated leadership in advancing our concerns through creation of regulations and testifying at various boards and legislative hearings. Her work has been instrumental in ensuring that our voices are heard at the state level. In her role as policy coordinator for the Yukon River Drainage Fisheries Association, Olivia's worked tirelessly to support the advancement of our traditional ways, knowing and providing regulatory and policy analysis. Her commitment to our way of life and her ability to navigate this complex regulatory landscape makes her an invaluable asset to the Board of Fish. Olivia's appointment is set to begin, I'm not sure exactly, maybe July 1st or something like that, I believe, and we believe her unique perspective and dedication will contribute significantly to the Board's work in managing Alaska's fisheries responsibly and sustainably. I respectfully urge the committee to confirm Olivia Irwin to the Alaska Board of Fish. Again, it's an honor to speak on her behalf, in support of her, and with the board here, with the committee. Sorry. Thank you for your time and your consideration.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Silas. I do not see anyone else online wishing to testify on Olivia Irwin's appointment. Again, I will ask in the room, is there anyone wishing to testify? Seeing no one, I will close public testimony. That takes us back to the appointee, Samuel Laffey, appointed to the State Assessment Review Board. Yes, Senator Hughes.
I'm sorry I couldn't get your attention before you went on to the next one. I just wanted to make a comment about Olivia as I was reviewing all the letters. Very impressive. But, Madam Chair, the thing that probably impressed me the most was that she enjoys memorizing hunting and fishing regulations. I don't know that I've ever seen that in anyone that submitted, but you can tell she is serious about this, and she does have an impressive resume at this point, so I just thought I'd point that out.
Thank you very much, Senator Hughes. Any other comments at this point? All right. We'll go back to Samuel Laffey, State Assessment Review Board. Is he online? Yes? The answer is yes? Okay. Great. Mr. Laffey, can you hear us?
I can, Madam Chair. Can y'all hear me?
Yes. Yes. Before you begin, Mr. Laffey, I will just review for the committee's information what the responsibilities of the State Assessment Review Board is. The board consists of 5 members. The board conducts oil and gas property assessment appeal hearings on values set by the Department of Revenue. They meet a couple times a year, it looks like, and so that is their responsibility. They must be knowledgeable about the assessment procedures for pipeline transportation of gas and unrefined oil. So with that, Mr. Laffey, welcome to the committee. If you would introduce yourself to the committee and share with us your experience, knowledge in this area, and desire to serve on this particular commission. Mr. Laffey?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and thank you very much to the other members of the committee. I first of all want to apologize. I believe I was supposed to appear early in your Friday committee meeting, and I believe there were some technical issues that seemed to have been fixed. But I appreciate your time and. Now to introduce myself. My name is Sam Laffey. I am an attorney in the state of Alaska. I live in Anchorage. I am calling in from Nairobi, Kenya. This is a bit unusual, but I'd be happy to answer questions about that. But effectively, I'm on vacation right now, visiting family and friends, and enjoying the beautiful continent of Alaska, which is way too hot, and I really miss Anchorage. I live in Anchorage, Alaska, and as I mentioned, I'm an attorney. I work for the state of Alaska in the Department of Administration, Office of Public Advocacy, and I advocate for various clients who are indigent around the state of Alaska, mostly in child need of aid cases. So you might be wondering to yourself, and based on my resume directly, why I sought to be the nominee for the State Assessment Review Board, why I'm interested in something that seems to be perhaps a little bit different than what I do. The answer is, oil and gas law is something I studied a lot when I was getting my law degree at the University of Wyoming, and as well as my MBA there. I'm very, very good with numbers. I'm very good at using best practices and standards to figure out what the value is. And more importantly for this board, I applied because from talking with some former members of the board, I began to realize that a lot of what the board does is reviews statutory law that passed by the legislature, regulations from the Department of Revenue for the state of Alaska, and most importantly, in particularly in recent times, reviews case law within the state of Alaska regarding previous state assessment review board decisions and previous State Department of Revenue assessment decisions. Fairly recently, there's a very important case on the city of Valdez about what sort of assets can be considered that I think is going to have a long-term impact on the state of Alaska for years to come. I applied after. And very interested in being on the board because I feel in addition to my background and knowledge of legal and regulatory issues that sort of bedevil this committee by necessity, I also can provide with my legal background some sort of different analysis. There are staff, certainly from office administrative hearings and advocates from in each side in each appeal, but I felt it would be useful for the board to have to have somebody on the board who, well, may not have as much direct experience at this point in his career with oil and gas processes, but can sit, but can read a case cited by one of the parties in their briefs, go look it up, do their own analysis, and actually come up with a pretty decent understanding and presentation to the board about what that case means and if one side or another is misinterpreting or might have gotten something different in their brief than anything else. With that, I really appreciate the time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions of the member of the Senate, State of Alaska Senate Committee on Resources may have. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Laffey. Committee members, questions? Senator Myers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Mr. Laffey, interesting legal career. I'm curious, though, since we're talking about appraisals and assessments, what kind of experience you have in assessing real estate in general or assessing real estate regarding oil and gas in particular?
In general, I have a bit of experience assessing real estate, very little at all, assessing real estate that's directly related to the value of a pipeline, per se. I do have a fair from growing up in a family that did a lot of real estate transactions in the lower 48. I do know a lot of, and taking classes and that I know a lot about assessments of real estate. Pipelines are really something I only know from an academic sense of from classes I took in law school and in my MBA program.
Follow-up, Senator Myers.
Thank you.
Senator Klayman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Laffey, I'm one of the lawyers in the legislature. You present an interesting resume that is broad in experience in almost everything except oil and gas and oil and gas valuation. And should we be concerned that we're putting somebody on this commission that really has, particularly in your practice experience after you left law school, practically no experience in doing the work that you would be doing on this commission?
Through the chair, thank you very much, Senator. That is, that's an excellent question. Unfortunately, I respectfully don't feel I'm qualified to answer that particular question directly. I feel that's an answer yourself and your esteemed colleagues must make. And if I don't pass muster, that's obviously your prerogative. I would not ever wish to impose my views for yours and your colleagues, sir.
Follow up, Senator Klayman.
Well, Mr. Laffey, I recognize that's a decision that we get to make, but you're the person we're evaluating, and I don't think not answering the question is really answers that. I mean, I can tell you that as an attorney who has tried many cases, there have been times in which I've been asked to try cases in which until I picked up the case, I had absolutely no experience in that area of law, and nevertheless, I needed to go into court and advocate on behalf of my client, and I did. And I think it's a fair question, and a fair question for me to have you answer as to why, given that you have, other than some courses in law school and clearly an interest in law school, you appear to have not any experience in this area. And I'm actually asking for reassurance from you as to why I should not have concerns about you taking on this role. And I think you're the only person that can answer that.
Through the chair, thank you very much, Senator. Um, In truth, Senator, it's difficult, I think, sometimes. But if there's one thing I've learned from being a lawyer, it's to be very frank and always to show candor to whatever body I'm appearing in front, whether or not it's this committee or one of the judges in the Superior Court in Anchorage. I feel, while I do not have the direct experience that other members of the board may have had that are currently on it and have been on it for some of them since for over 10 years at this point, may have had when they first started being on the board. However, one thing I think I want to impress upon you is I'm somebody who really learns quickly, throws himself at whatever task has been presented in front of him. And that's what I have done since I was appointed in October. So far we have had one case that I wasn't able to participate fully in because of, it was kind of sprung on me right at the last minute and over Christmas. And since then we've received quite a few cases in the last few weeks that are at various stages of being decided. I have spent quite a bit of my vacation time actually reading the briefs for those cases and the complaints and making notes for questions that we have at a board meeting tomorrow morning. At this point, I would say I believe I've been quite an asset to the other members of and to the committee as a whole and to my fellow board members. And I think perhaps that best speaks for my fitness and overall ability to serve on this board and effectively advocate and for what the correct assessment is and help the board make and my fellow board members make the correct decision on assessments going for the length of my term on this board, sir.
Follow up, Senator Klayman.
So let's focus just on the work you've done since you've started work on the board prior to the confirmation hearing and in our process here in the legislature. I recognize that oil and gas valuations are nothing like a child in need of aid case, which is a lot of the work you're doing in your other professional life. Have you had any difficulty in assessing the issues and making and reading the statutes and reading the evaluations and making balanced and thoughtful decisions about the matters before you in your time on the commission?
Through the chair, thank you for your question, Senator. I have had some difficulty. I have had to go grab the Oil and Gas Terms Dictionary that I bought quite a few years ago at a thrift store in Houston for 99 cents and look up what some things are in the assessments too. And I also have had to look very closely at what's being argued. I believe all these appeals are public of public record at this stage, but there's frankly quite a bit of consistency in what is appealed every year. Some petitioners, like the city of Valdez in particular, feel that other parties affiliated with in the oil and gas pipeline networks are not actually being fully assessed in terms of how much property is being considered by the Department of Revenue and regularly file appeals about that. None of these appeals have been that particularly challenging, though, aside from getting backed up to speed with the terminology. It's been mostly very, in my opinion, it's been very standard things that I feel any attorney would do, reading a brief, understanding what the, and taking notes to understand what the core issues are at point, and jotting down notes to and questions to discuss with other committee members when we have our meeting about what actually is the assessment and what are the real issues are for a particular case.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Laffey, for your desire to serve on this board. Can you just tell me a little bit more about how you would make the decisions regarding taxable property value, and maybe when a appeal comes your direction, how you would measure those or how you would test those?
Thank you, Senator, through the chair. That is a very good question. To be very blunt, my intention, and so far, I think what I've been doing in a limited sense, hues very close to this, but in my assessment, the only thing I could do as a member of this State Assessment Review Board is stay very closely within the actual terms of what's within the revenue statutes, revenue regulations, dealing with what is assessable property, what isn't, and what the procedures are for determining the value. If there is gray area, then at that point, if there is ever a gray area, then I would perceive it as mostly mostly a balancing test between what is presented by the State Department of Revenue and what is presented by the petitioner, most more often than not, it seems like those gray areas are the hearings that don't settle before the State Assessment Review Board has hearings. And I would be very interested at a contested hearing in figuring out what the actual factual assessment is beyond the brief about the issues. So, and ask in particular through the chair, ask questions of experts about what is about the relevant issues of any given appeal.
Follow up, Senator Kawasaki. Thank you. Mr. Laffey, I note on your resume that you were admitted to the Alaska Bar 4 years ago in April of 2021. The assessment of oil and gas property and transportation facilities is critical to the state of Alaska. It is the industry that helps fund our state. And so this is a particularly this State Assessment Review Board is a pretty important one. And that's why there's not a public member on this board. It is a committee. It is a board made up of people who are knowledgeable of assessment procedures for pipeline transportation of gas and unrefined oil. What motivated you to move to Alaska? Was it a job offer? What drew you here?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Through the chair, that takes me back a couple of years.
Make it a brief years, assessment, actually. Please. A brief review, please.
Okay. Well, okay. So the dime store version, I would say, Madam Chair, is, to answer your question, is I've wanted to live in Alaska for quite some time. And as you can see, I went to law school in Wyoming. That's about as close as you can get to living in Alaska in the lower 48. In fact, where I clerked in Pinedale, Wyoming, is basically about the most remote point in the lower 48 that you can be. We're not in the most remote spot that you can't drive anywhere from, or farthest away from a road, more specifically, is like 50 miles north of Pinedale. I mean, Alaska is very much, I wish I'd been born here, honestly. It's very much a great state. It has great people. I went to school with quite a few folks from Alaska, because at the time, this University of Wyoming Law School gave in-state tuition to folks who attended law school from Alaska. I don't believe they do so anymore, but there's quite a few alumni from Wyoming and Alaska. And I came up here because I wanted to practice in a place that had urban and rural areas. There were not as many, it was a small bar. That's something else I wanted. And I wanted to be in a place that had the ability for me to be in rural areas with relative ease and enjoy being outdoors. And so that's why I chose to move to Alaska. I can tell you it took quite a few tries, because every time I tried to come up during law school for an internship or for a clerkship after law school, things just didn't work out. But eventually, after clerking in Wyoming and going to American Samoa, I was able to finally get a job at the Anchorage District Attorney's Office and come up. And yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Laffey. Committee members, any further questions? Seeing none, is there anyone in the room wishing to testify on the appointment of Mr. Laffey to the State Assessment Review Board, as I open public testimony? I see no one. There's no one online wishing to testify. So I will close public testimony on the appointment of Samuel Laffey. With that, I will look to Senator Klayman for a motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Senate Resources Committee has reviewed the qualifications of the governor's appointees and recommends that the following names be forwarded to a joint session of the Alaska Legislature for consideration: Samuel Laffey, State Assessment Review Board, and Olivia Irwin, Board of Fisheries. This does not reflect the intent by any of the members to vote for or against these individuals during any further sessions for the purposes of confirmation.
Thank you, Senator Klayman. Seeing no objection, that motion will pass. The names will be forwarded to the joint session. Members will please stay behind after this committee adjourns to sign the document related to this report. Next, we're going to move on to the two joint resolutions related to wildfire preparedness. The reason we have two is there is a Senate Joint Resolution 18, as well as a House Joint Resolution 15. The joint resolution from the House has come over and will take precedent over the Senate resolution. I'm going to have my staff, Mr. Harbison, go through a brief, very brief, overview of wildfire risk in the Anchorage area and other areas of the state, Mr. Harbison, and then we will have the House member, Representative Kai Holland, come up and present his resolution. Mr. Harbison?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Intamayo Harbison, staff to Senator Giesel. Before you today is a PowerPoint that just highlights fire risk in Anchorage and compares it to the West Coast states and some other areas in Alaska. Starting off very quickly, we have the Palisades Fire in California. On this slide, you see the state of California CAL FIRE fire risk assessment map with that Palisades Fire laid over it. As you see here, you have a fire that began in a high-risk area, moving into a low-risk area, causing severe devastation to that area. similar thing has happened in Oregon in previous years. Last year, for example, they broke their total fire burn record. Here we have the Falls Fire just north of Burns, Oregon. This fire started in a high-risk area, moved to a moderate-risk area. Similarly, we have the Cow Valley Fire and the Durkee Fire, also in Oregon, right there on the Idaho border. This is a fire that moved from a moderate risk area to a high risk area before it proceeded to burn out of control. That brings us to Alaska. Recently, we had the Munson Creek Fire up near Chena Hot Springs in Fairbanks. This is a fire that burned in a moderate risk area into a high risk area, causing structural damage and devastation to that region. We've also seen similarly on the Kenai Peninsula in recent years. In 2019, we had the Swan Lake Fire that burned upwards of 162,000 acres there. And back in 2014, there was also the Funny River Trail Fire. Here we see those fires in brown, the boundaries of them, superimposed over that map. And as we can see from the blue, that was considered a low-risk fire area. So you have a fire starting in a low-risk area and sort of burning out of control there. Also, there was in 2016 the McHugh Creek Fire. This was just south of Anchorage. Here we have it again superimposed over that same map styling, and you see it burning there in a low fire risk area. Of particular note, this fire was allowed to burn for an extended period of time, specifically because fire crews were unable to reach the fire to be able to fight it because of the steep terrain and high winds at the time. Getting into sort of the meat of this, here you have the Anchorage Bowl Fire Risk Assessment Map, and we're going to zoom in here on a few areas. Here we have the East Anchorage Hillside Fire Risk Area. Everything that you see in dark brown is considered extreme fire risk. Light brown is considered high fire risk. And then the lighter green and darker green are moderate and low risk, respectively. I would draw your attention here to this red circle. This is an area located over by the Campbell Tract. And here we see three fires within the last handful of years beginning in that area that could potentially have had the opportunity to burn out of control. Just going back to this previous map here, you see it could burn potentially through all of the Campbell Tract and up the hillside there in Anchorage. So that's why those are of particular note. It's also a tremendous risk to schools, homes, and businesses. Here I have highlighted both Service High School and South High School. In between those, I'm sure many of you know, there are a number of homes, businesses, and the like there that are at, you know, sitting in extreme fire risk area as well as high and moderate risk area. And as we've seen from those previous fires highlighted at the top of this PowerPoint, fires can move between those different areas. And so all of this becomes potential for severe fire risk. Here we have the map of Girdwood. And I would highlight a particular concern for Girdwood is that almost all of the town is considered to be high or extreme fire risk, and they rely on a volunteer firefighting force there. So if a fire were to burn out of control in Girdwood, it would take a response from Anchorage firefighting units to be able to possibly put that under control, which, you know, could take 45 minutes for them to get there, which would be not ideal. So in conclusion, this resolution highlights the need for focus on wildfire education, mitigation, and preparation here in the state of Alaska. This is to avoid these similarly large fires that we've seen that have caused devastation in California, Oregon, other parts of Alaska. I could highlight, you know, wildfires in Hawaii, the wildfires on the Alcan last year. It's an increasing problem, and so we want to address that, and we believe that we do with these resolutions. as I noted, wildfires can move between high and low-risk areas and vice versa. And as we saw on that map, there are a lot of extremely high-risk fire areas within the Anchorage Bowl. And so we believe that with this increased wildfire education mitigation and preparation, that Anchorage could possibly avoid the fate of these other communities that have lost structure, lives, et cetera, to fires in recent years. And with that, Madam Chair, I complete my presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Harbison. Any questions for Mr. Harbison? The maps and the modeling comes from the Institute of Social and Economic Research at the University of Alaska. Thank you very much. So with that, we're going to move directly into House Joint Resolution 15, which has come over to us from the other body, and I will invite Representative Kai Holland and his staff to come forward to present the resolution.
Good afternoon, Chair Giesel and the House Resources Committee. Thank you for the time, and also thank you for the understanding as our schedule today was a little unexpected, so I appreciate the flexibility that there's been with trying to plan and organize the...
Thank you, Representative Holland. I'll have you introduce yourself for the
sure.
record.
Thank you.
And this, incidentally, is the Senate Resources Committee.
Thank you. So I'm Kai Holland, Representative for House District 9, and thank you for the opportunity to be here. If it's okay, I'll jump into a couple slides.
Yes, please do.
Great, thank you. So first off, I just want to acknowledge that the material that you've just seen really presents a great framework for the work that has been going on. The resolution that was developed was initially instigated coming out of the Rabbit Creek Community Council at the beginning of February, when there was an awareness that the dry conditions in South Central Alaska were presenting a perhaps unprecedented level of low
Excuse me, Representative Holland. I don't believe you – were we provided with these slides?
I have them. Right here.
Okay. Please proceed.
Great. Thank you. Work in February was raising concern and attention to the dry conditions and the potential for an early and perhaps more significant wildfire season. And in preparing that resolution, it was shared out amongst all of the Anchorage area community councils, as well as the state and local fire jurisdictions, to encourage more attention to the concern about that danger and to encourage the early coordination and planning for the wildfire season. And in doing that, we also began to understand, as you see in this map, that the concern this spring for the wildfire danger was extending beyond areas that sometimes we think of as having high fire danger into southwest and southeast Alaska. And this particular map, I believe, is for April. It comes out of a national forecasting and changes month to month, so this is not a snapshot for the entire period.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Hughes.
Yes, I noticed this was issued March 3rd, and I texted some of you this same map that was again issued and updated a month later issue. So just want to let you know it's still in danger and similar even now.
Great. Thank you.
Please continue, Representative Holland.
So just to encourage you, if you're interested in this, that the maps do come out each month, so the conditions change. This is not meant to be a fixed static one. At any rate, the key recommendations that came out of the work from the Anchorage community were then used to help construct this House Joint Resolution 15, and there's really two main areas here. One is strengthening the communication and coordination amongst all the different agencies and encouraging them to for this 2025 wildfire season to review and update their plans and to work together on coordinating their plans for this wildfire season, including looking into the resources and the water that would be needed. And one of the things I wanted to touch on here that I think is a unique aspect of what we focused in on were the many communities that we were finding both in the Anchorage area, but we also found it as we went up and looked in the areas up in the Mat-Su Valley and going up into the Fairbanks area, where you have a single road that leads to a large number of homes. And what we found is these areas that in my district are ones like Bear Valley, Glen Alps, Potter Valley, that have single roads that go into a large number of homes. And those roads, in some cases, have not really been treated and maintained with the idea in mind that one day they might have to support a large number of fire apparatus trying to get up and a large number of people with motorhomes and cars and boats and all the stuff trying to get out. And it was really that concern, if you go back to 2018 when our work in the community started, when we watched what happened with the Paradise Campfire. And that fire in particular that resulted in 85 people being killed and over 18,000 structures. What you saw in that, and then we've seen in other fires, are cases where we've not planned out the routes that would allow us to get in and get out. And to manage that. So this resolution in particular in a couple places is bring attention to, are we looking at those critical routes? Are we looking ahead of the fire season at making sure that the treatment and the right-of-way have been cleared and that we've made sure that the intersections and the capacity of that road will ensure that if we had a major fire and we had to get a lot of people out while we were trying to get a lot of equipment in, that that would be successful. So the first part here was really looking at the agency side. What I want to emphasize, though, is that this resolution makes a number of references and recommendations as it relates to what can we as residents in the community also be doing. So rather than just simply hoping that the agencies get a lot of preparation done and they get funding and get the equipment, we also wanted to bring attention to the work to engage the community in what they could do themselves. And so advocacy for the FireWise program, for people learning about Ready, Set, Go and having a go bag ready, and also learning about how to get notifications so they can get timely, authoritative information about what's going on and what should they be doing. We also wanted to bring in awareness of some of the early wildfire detection technology and tools that are being used. Chugach Electric, in particular, has started putting monitors on some of their poles. We've also run trials with some infrared cameras that are trained to specifically look for wildfires and recognizing that if we can improve our detection of a wildfire, we can speed up the response to that fire. And then finally, organizing and encouraging local communities to do their own drills. And we've had a lot of success, particularly in my areas where we've worked with a local fire department station and a community neighborhood group that would get together and say, let's talk about how we might be prepared if we needed to work with them. So the resolution is, I hope, a call to action for this 2025 wildfire season. And we saw, as a result of the early engagement, a lot of great work going on by the state, local, and federal different agencies, including advancing the declaration of the start of the wildfire season. You may recall that that was actually started on March 17th, earlier than it normally is, in recognition to this key issue. And there's been a tremendous amount of work, and I want to be very clear and very thankful for how much work has been going into this activity over the course of the last couple months. So this resolution, in many ways, brings form and awareness to the work that is going on at this point, and I hope we can continue to lift that up. And this call to action, again, really looks at what our state and local leaders can be doing and understanding what they are doing to implement wildfire mitigation and response plans, what we as residents can be doing our part, to be doing work around our homes to ensure that those homes are at less risk of fire danger, and then, of course, continuing to advocate at the federal level for the support that we need to do and the support for our first responders and public safety officers. I just want to wrap up with one final comment. This resolution is really a call to action for the 2025 wildfire season, what's going on now and what we will be in for the next few months at this point. But I hope long-term that it is helping us become more aware of the long-term work we need to do. If you go back 100 years, you will recall that we used to have large urban core wildfires, if you will. If you think about Chicago or London or San Francisco, that used to be a known risk of large, dense, urban-built environments, that we had major fires that would burn out a major portion of a city, and we would have to rebuild. 100 years ago, we began to think and work and invest hard in how to gain control over that danger. We changed our building codes. We put in sprinkler systems. We invested in fire departments. We gave the fire departments apparatus. We made sure that there were secondary emergency exits and signs. We did a series of things that protected our urban core so that we now don't, for the most part, need to worry about the core of our cities burning anymore. It's my belief that this work and the work that's going on by many people is taking us down a path where the large urban perimeter fires that we're seeing in our wildland urban interface, whether it's Lahaina or LA or Boulder, we can go on with a long list of cities. It's my hope that down the road that we will be able to also gain control of how do we make sure that those fires are a thing of the past, like we have done in our urban core. I believe we will have large fires in the future, but we don't have to be seeing a loss of life. We don't have to be losing a lot of buildings. We may scorch some paint, but that's the goal I'm working towards, is bringing awareness and encouraging and supporting that work. So I appreciate your time today and look forward to any questions I can answer. Thank you.
Committee members, any questions? Senator Hughes.
Thank you for this presentation. When you think about fires that have swept through cities, it's a horrific thought. So I appreciate you bringing this forward. I looked at the National Interagency Fire Center, and I can actually provide that. The May one remains the same. The June map, they must be expecting that they're going to get some more precipitation and that we might get some reprieve, but it still is a concern, and I think it's particularly a concern because even if it's not started by lightning, which is often the case, we do have people that camp and use fires, and then we also have the homeless population that will build fires as well, and often those are in areas that are treed. And I'm just wondering if any of the work is coordinating with some of these homeless camps that are placed near trees, and you know, you get the wind pick up, and it could be disastrous. So is there any work on that front?
Through the chair, it's a good question. I don't know if I believe we may have Norm MacDonald from the Division of Forestry here who might be able to speak to those plans. I'm aware kind of anecdotally that I know the Municipality of Anchorage is trying to look at the camps and locations and controls, but if he's available.
Mr. MacDonald is online. Mr. MacDonald, did you hear the question from Senator Hughes?
I did, and can you hear me okay?
Yes, loud and clear.
Okay, yeah, good afternoon. For the record, my name is Norm MacDonald. I'm the Deputy Director of the Alaska Division of Forestry and Fire Protection. I oversee the fire program. Through the Chair, Senator Hughes, we do work in Anchorage and field mitigation work, and we are working with the Anchorage Park and Fire Department to identify some of the higher risk areas. Some of the homeless areas along the bike trails and other places have been identified. So we're scheduled to start work on some of those locations this spring. I think we'll be up in the first week in May 5th, I believe. I have a crew working in Anchorage on some of those locations.
Thank you, Deputy Director. Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you. I have a question, too, whoever can answer it, and it had to deal with recent announcements from the White House that FEMA would no longer be, or essentially that they wanted states to sort of resume or assume the disaster response funding issue, and I kind of wanted just to hear how the state is addressing that, and I appreciate the sponsor of this bill bringing it forward to us, because I think it's something that we're going to have to assume, and there is a lot of risk that we've got, especially to our urban wilderness interfaces. So I guess it's for whoever can answer that question.
Well, I'm going to direct it to Norm MacDonald. I will point out he is the Alaska Division of Forestry and Fire Protection. So, Deputy Director, can you respond to Senator Kawasaki's question?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, that's something that we are aware of. Those are discussions that are taking place in Washington. Really, right now, we are in kind of a wait-and-see mode. I think there's going to be a lot of conversations and information shared before any decisions come out. But I will say, as through the state of Alaska and the National State Foresters Association, we do have direct conduit to Washington and are part of those conversations and able to present Alaska's concerns or support of any of the changes that are being discussed.
Follow-up, Senator Kosaki.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. McDonald. Earlier in or in the mid-2010 frame, we had like huge wildfires and they brought smoke and it was horrible. And I think the lesson from that was to try to build fire breaks and to try and build enough road area or access point areas that fire equipment could get to some place quick. Is that something that you are still doing now, or is it something that has become sort of lax because of a lack of funding?
I think the chair, Senator Kawasaki, the fuels program and the fuels mitigation program is still a large part of our effort and where we invest our time and energy and funding. I think you're referencing the Murphy Dome fuels break that we worked on and was successful in protecting the Murphy Dome subdivisions from the Shovel Creek fires. And we have those throughout the state. It's a big part of our program. We work on those from Fairbanks to Homer with a variety of different funding sources, both state and federal. So it's something that we continually need to look for funding to support, but it's a large part of our mission is the preparedness, that fuels mitigation, and just fire safing our communities.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Thank you very much, Representative Holland. I am going to not hold public comment today, public testimony. We will set this bill aside and open public testimony at our next hearing. I am setting an amendment deadline for this resolution of Wednesday, this coming Wednesday at 5 p.m. Thank you, Representative Holland.
Thank you.
We'll move on now to Senate Bill 174, Invasive Species Management. This is a bill brought to us by Senator Forrest Dunbar. So I would welcome him to come forward, along with his staff, Rachel Levy, to present the bill. While you're coming forward, I'll just mention that online we have, it looks like Casey Dinkle and Doug Vincent Lang. Am I looking at the correct? Yeah, under invasive species. And I know Joe Felkel is here in the room as well, and Mia Kirk is not. All right. But Mr. Felkel is. Welcome, Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the Resources Committee. SB 174 will help improve the prevention, eradication, and control of invasive species in Alaska to help reduce their long-term impact in the state. Northern pike have devastated salmon runs in south central Alaska. Salmon habitat is being degraded by Alodia throughout Alaska. Orange hawkweed is taking over Anchorage roadways, and there are plenty of other examples that I'm sure we're all aware of. Many of you might have met with folks from the Invasive Species Council during the interim. This is an issue I think is getting increased attention in our state because of the increase in the number of invasive species here. Madam Chair, I know we're pressed for time, so I'll probably keep my remarks short today. I do have my staffer, Ms. Levy, available for a short sectional, if that's all right with you. And then we, I believe, have some time. I believe there are people here who'd like to offer public comment as well.
Yes, I would like to get to public comment. In fact, why don't we set the sectional analysis aside? If we have time at the end, we can come back to sectional analysis, if that's all right, Senator Dunbar, and then we can hear from the public testimony. I know there are people here in the room that wish to testify. I do not have any of their names. And so I'm going to go right now to Al Barrett, who is in Fairbanks, who has signed up to testify. Hello, Mr. Barrett. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Al Barrett. I reside in Fairbanks. I'm a member of the Board of Game. I'm not representing the Board of Game or views of the Board of Game. These are my thoughts and my comments alone and as an Alaskan resident. I read SB 174, and I read the notes on the bias, and I'm neutral on this proposal, but I didn't notice anything that was mentioned on basis or in the analysis that had reflected that the, you know, the Board of Game already has some authority on this, legislative authority or statutory authority, I meant to say, underneath AS 1605-255, Section 5. And we've also, the board has in history has made regulations pertaining to that statutory authority under 5 AAC 92029. I would just like, if this bill is to move forward, Madam Chair, I would like to see if the board would, or the committee would consider adding a Board of Game member to the council. And the other thing I notice is if a statute like this was created, it would seem to me as a layperson reading regulation and law that you would have two competing statutes if one wasn't rescinded or amended somehow. And that's my testimony for today, Madam Chair, to keep things quick.
Thank you very much, Mr. Barrett. I know that the bill sponsor took notes and will take your suggestions under consideration. Thank you. I, again, am unknown whether we have people in the room wishing. Oh, there are a few. I see one person has shown up. Here in the room we have Kim Titus. Is it Kim Titus? Welcome, Mr. Titus. So, as you've heard, introduce yourself for the record, any affiliations, and I'm allowing 2 minutes for testimony. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Kim Titus. I reside in Juneau for the last 36 years. I'm a retired wildlife professional. I've worked across the state in a variety of species, from brown bears to goshawks to polar bears. I'm an avid user of Alaska's fish and wildlife resources, and I desire to keep non-invasive species from the state. I applaud SB 174 and the establishment of the Alaska Invasive Species Council. I like the broad representation, but I will note that there is no federal land management agency representation. That's pretty odd for me as someone who has served on a lot of, as a state representative on a lot of federal committees when the state has to push and shove to get a seat on a table on a federal committee. Seems odd to me. I note that this bill designs a pretty complex non-regulatory coordination system, notwithstanding the excellent statement from Senator Dunbar. There's already a fair amount of invasive species work going on in the state. ADF&G has a large web page. They have dedicated staff, which they've had for probably over 20 years, to this issue. And also, ADF&G and the Board of Game have the clean list under F5 AAC 92029 that was just mentioned, that for decades has been successfully kept the public from bringing in non-native wildlife and their associated diseases to the state. Also note, DNR has a strategic plan for invasive weed and agricultural pest management and prevention. So there's a lot of stuff already going on in this state. And federal land management agencies, at least until recently, had all sorts of invasive species management plans across the state. Finally, I find the definitions such as invasive species, management of invasive species, and non-native species to be incomplete. There seems to be no consideration in the language of how to handle species that are naturally moving into or across the state. Examples would be mule deer now moving into Alaska, and they're being followed by mountain lions. There's no accommodation in the language that I can see for that.
Thank
this bill
you,
to me
Mr.
seems
Titus.
Overly complex for coordination for things that perhaps are already occurring to a large extent. Thank you.
I appreciate your testimony. If you would be willing to submit that in writing, that could be helpful.
Thank you.
Not only for the committee, but for the bill sponsor as well to review. Thank you. And the same applies to Mr. Barrett, who called in with some very specific input also. Is there anyone else in the room who wishes to testify on Senate Bill 174? All right, seeing none, I'm going to close public testimony for the time. And we're back with the sponsor and his staff before us. And if you would take us through a sectional, please, that would be very helpful.
Sure. Hello, for the record, I'm Rachel Levy, staff to Senator Dunbar. This sectional has four sections. Section 1 amends AS 16.20 to add three subsections. AS 16.20.800 establishes the 11-person Alaska Invasive Species Council, outlines the council's role in managing invasive species, and establishes the form, function, membership, responsibilities, and expectations of the council. AS 16.20.810 establishes the Invasive Species Response Fund as an account in the general fund. AS 16.20.850 defines council, department, invasive species, manage invasive species, and non-native species. Section 2 sets a date of repeal for the new subsections of July 1st, 2035. Section 3 amends the uncodified law of the state of Alaska to add a new section detailing A, the appointment and terms of members by the governor, and B, the timing of the first meeting within 90 days of appointment of members and the number of meetings required in the initial year at 4. Section 4 sets an immediate effective date under AS 01.10.070C. This concludes the sectional analysis. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Levy. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to speak briefly to the bill and also to the comments that were made. So my interest in this bill, my interest in invasive species goes back to being the child of a fisheries biologist and seeing invasive European slugs in Cordova that still run rampant. But in 2022, I had the chance to go to a convening at the BP Energy Center of the Alaska Invasive Species Partnership. And that I misspoke. It's the partnership, not the council, that we've worked with on this before. And they've identified this as a need for our state. That, yes, there is work happening, but it needs to be coordinated better. And there are a number of professionals involved in this space who want to see the creation of this council. There are 18 states that have councils like this, and I would wager that none of them rely on their fish and wildlife and natural resources to the degree that Alaska does. Alaska is a uniquely pristine place where we are integrated with our natural resources, and invasive species have a tremendous amount of ability to do harm. I'll also mention that I'm working with a member of the other body from Southeast, and her interest has been piqued by the appearance of the European green crab, which is spreading throughout Southeast and threatening the already struggling red king crab population. So public testimony, I think, is well taken, but I'll say that this was not a concept that was dreamed up by my office, but rather by professionals in this space who have come to us and asked us to help establish this council. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Dunbar. Comments? Senator Klayman.
Much more comment than a question, but one of the topics that has been much of an anchorage issue is the chokecherry invasive species issues. And it's, not only do we get into the question of how do you remove them, but then quickly get into the question about if we're going to be effective, we have to sometimes make use of chemicals that some of the folks are very unhappy about using some of the chemicals to be able to manage those. And it's a reflection of the very diverse set of challenges that we face in trying to protect our natural habitat.
May I respond to that, Madam Chair?
Yes, please, Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Senator Klayman, through the chair, for bringing that. The European chokecherry, Prunus patus, one of the first pieces of legislation I passed in the Anchorage Assembly was banning the sale of Prunus patus within the municipality. And the interesting thing about Prunus patus is it was originally brought in by the State Department of Transportation to do erosion control along. And as recently as 10 years ago, we were still actively planting this invasive species. And it's an example of, yes, there is some work being done on this, but often the right hand and the left hand aren't talking to each other. We need better coordination through our agencies to make sure we're not bringing in these kinds of species. And you're right. Now we're spending a tremendous amount of money trying to remove it, particularly from the Chester Creek Greenbelt, where it is choking out native species and, incidentally, is also toxic to moose. So there's a bunch of reasons we want to get Prunus patus out of Anchorage and Alaska. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Hughes.
You mentioned working with the partnership, and it sounds like they're very passionate about this. Is there some reason why the partnership couldn't bring things to the attention, be maybe the coordinator and convener, rather than making another entity of government to do it?
Thank you, Senator Hughes, Madam Chair, through the chair. I should have said from the beginning, for the record, this is Forrest Dunbar, Senator from District J. So one of the frustrations, so the clean list was mentioned before, and there are a couple of places within our statutes where the invasive species sort of live, not literally, but where they are designated. And the professionals at the partnership have expressed frustration that sometimes they bring to the departments the attention that there are additional animals or actually it's more often plant species that should be added, and they aren't. And it takes a very long time to do so. And so I think their feeling is this should be elevated to something a little more official so that hopefully those kind of regulations can be changed more quickly. I think, again, pointing back to that convening I went to in 2022, there certainly is work being done in the private sector. But I think they feel that they need a sort of a more official forum to continue this work.
Thank you.
I also see online Casey Dinkle, who is an agronomist.
Agronomist.
Thank you, agronomist. Alaska Plant Materials Center, Department of Natural Resources. Mr. Dinkle, you are signed up to testify. Would you like to give your comments right now, please?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, loud and clear.
For the record, my name is Casey Dinkle. I am the manager of the Alaska Plant Materials Center under the Division of Agriculture for the Department of Natural Resources. Through the chair, I guess the statement that we'd want to make is, as a manager of the Plant Materials Center, we host the state invasive plant coordinator at the Plant Materials Center, Cody Jacobson, and we work with him very closely on managing a host of species across the state. So one of them basically is Allodia, an invasive aquatic weed that Cody has worked on for better part of a year. We've also had a person in that previous position that worked on that for several years through different water bodies across the state. Currently, it's difficult from our standpoint to be all places at all times. Invasives, there's a host of invasive species in the agricultural realm, such as orange hawkweed, bird vetch, to name a few. Also, Prunus patus, chokecherry that was mentioned earlier. And so Cody works very closely with a bunch of different agencies across the state, soil and water districts, Forest Service, you name it, to be able to address those different species. So from that standpoint, the Invasive Species Council, would give another layer of information to the industry for us to be able to tackle those items. But it really, really depends on coordination and funding throughout the state. So I don't know if that answers the question or the backing that we are trying to provide.
Thank you, Mr. Dinkle. You sort of answered the question we had yet to ask, what will that cost? So thank you for preemptively responding to that. Are there any questions for Deputy Director, the Plant Materials Center Director, Mr. Dinkle? I'm not seeing any. Thank you very much for calling in, Mr. Dinkle.
Thank you.
Senator Dunbar, any closing remarks today?
No, Madam Chair. I know we will have another hearing on this in the future. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for the presentation. We will set this bill aside and take it up again later. It is an important subject, so thank you. This concludes our meeting. I will remind people that I have set an amendment deadline for the wildfire resolution of this coming Wednesday at 5 p.m. I'm also at this time going to set an amendment deadline for a bill that we heard last week, Senate Bill 180. This is the LNG import facilities legislation, and that will be Yes, Friday, May 2nd is Friday, Friday at noon. So this concludes our meeting. Our next meeting will be Wednesday, April 30th. At that time, we have Senate Bill 112 on the agenda. That's the oil and gas production tax. Please remember to stay and sign the document to record our meeting interviewing the governor's appointees. So the meeting will stand adjourned at this time. Let the record reflect. The time is 5 p.m.